This is The Artist's Response with Elizabeth Stewart, and you're welcome to join us. Please stay tuned for a program produced by Richard Dugan and researched and presented by Elizabeth Stewart, who welcomes the great artists of our community. What follows is a conversation of an artist's experience about the artist's response to trying times, creativity, reinvention, recovery, and of course, flexibility, which is in fact the narrative of our present time.
Hello, Santa Barbara. It's Elizabeth Stewart and your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful. I am beyond honored. I have with me T.C. Boyle. We're going to talk a little bit about his latest book, Blue Skies, because the Santa Barbara Museum of Art is hosting Mr. Boyle in a lecture Thursday, July 20th at 5:30. But before you get on the phone and get on the computer, it's sold out. It was sold out days ago. And so you'll have to just wait for Mr. Boyle to speak again soon at the museum, which he does. And I want to introduce a little bit my co-host, Deborah Holt Larkin, is here to help me interview Mr. Boyle because I was too nervous to do it on my own. Deborah is the author of A Lovely Girl, A True Story of Intrigue and Murder and Eccentricity, and it's set in Santa Barbara and our environment in the 1950s. And it is a kind of a murder case that centers around the 1958 murder of a 10-year-old. Deborah was recommended to me by the Santa Barbara Writers Conference to help me interview TC. And I want to say hello to Deborah and thank you for joining us from San Diego.
Hello, and thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really thrilled to be here with TC Boyle.
The other person on the show is T.C. Boyle, and T.C., his background is incredible. He has a Ph.D. from the University of Iowa and is a alumni of the famous Writers' Workshop there. Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction for the novel The World's End, and he is native of upstate New York and a former University of Southern California faculty. He's one of New Yorker's, quote, in quote marks, people. And a Penn Malamud winner also. He's written for The New Yorker, many other famous magazines. And one of the favorite stories that I read there after the mudslide, An Absence in Montecito of 2018. And he wrote of our tragedy right here in Santa Barbara, Montecito. In Playboy, he's got some fiction in 2020. A Pre-Sexual Lust Story. It's very interesting. And Esquire Fiction. He's got a story in Esquire as well. So he's a short story person. And his coverage of, our fires. So the Thomas Fire, I think he was evacuated, if I can read between the lines in some of the articles. And he talks about all of our 1,000 structures that were kind of devastated, and when the rains then in 2018 and the mudslides killing almost 24 people and 100 houses gone. And TC documented these events for me anyway, and as early as 2000, the year 2000, I read in 2001 A Friend of the Earth, and that was set in 2025. And I gotta say, when the fires and mudslides happened, I thought of T.C.'s novel that was written 18 years previously, and I thought, oh gosh, here we go. I find that so many of the books that T.C.'s written, and just very quickly, just going to give you some titles, so many of these books deal with the myopic human nature in regards to the very powerful force called nature. And that's, I think, why I really enjoyed following his articles regarding our own fires and mudslides. Just a quick shout out from the books. Water Music in 81, Budding Prospects, A Pastoral 84, World's End in 87, East is East in 90, The Road to Wellville 93, Tortilla Curtains in 95, Riven Rock, one of my favorites in 98. I was working with Frank McGinnity at the time when I was reading that. Frank helped greatly, I think, as he was helping TC understand the architecture around Riven Rock. A Friend of the Earth in 2000, we mentioned that. Drop City in 03, The Inner Circle 04, Talk 06, The Women in 09, When the Killing's Done in 11, San Miguel in 2012. The Harder They Come in 2015, Terranauts, fantastic. I saw the lecture there at the Museum of Art in 2016, Outside Looking in 2018, Talk to Me in 21, and Blue Skies, plus 11 collections of short stories. One anthology done with his wife. I don't know how that happened because I would fight with my partner if I tried to do something like that. I was reading all the critical reviews of Blue Sky when I was reading the book. New York Times in the May 2023 review, the title is A Family Drama Unfolds as Ecological Disasters Mount. Blue Skies considers life in coastal America made increasingly untenable by climate change. And the book is on Rated Books, a rave book, which is as best as it gets. And so I completely support your decisions, listeners, to go and buy this wonderful book, Blue Sky, published by Norton, by T.C. Boyle. And T.C., I had one overriding thought, and I wondered if you could reflect on this for me. I noticed that all your books, it's so interesting because you're thin, very thin person, and all the books have something to do with food somehow. There's well, something
hi, Elizabeth,
food.
And thanks for inviting me on the show, and thank you for that wonderful introduction, touching on many, many things. To address the first question, when you are reading a novel and there's a sex scene, that means the author is feeling very horny at that moment. When you see a food scene, that means the author is very hungry. And I suppose when you see the goodnight scene, that means the author is going to take a nap. Hmm. I do love to write about food within the context of a novel. Probably most significantly, my short story, Sorry Fugu, which is about a restaurant critic assailing a chef. And yes, it's about food on the surface, but really it's about the critic's role as opposed to the artist's role. By the way, I'm rooting for the artist.
I get it. What I was going to say about this, the food thing is, especially in Terranauts, it was a really interesting expose of food. But also Blue Sky, there's food in Blue Sky that you don't want to know about, listener. I mean, crickets, for example, that are made into protein, and then things that are food or could be food are also part of the narrative, like the catfish that I won't give too much away.
Yes,
but they're,
yes. Yeah, Elizabeth, you mentioned the Terranauts. So this is a book about the biosphere experiment, in the 1970s when we made, and 80s, made an enclosed environment and locked four men and four women in there for a period of 2 years to see what would come of that. Could we create a separate world? And so everything was in there to produce its own oxygen, all the plants, everything they had to eat. And so they lost a lot of weight. They lost a lot of weight in there. And it is, these experiments are still going on. NASA is still putting people into capsules here on Earth to see if they could possibly have created another world for us. By the way, when this NASA closure went on, Elizabeth Colbert, the wonderful science writer for The New Yorker, pointed out that, yeah, it's really hard to create an ecosphere. Maybe instead of doing that, we ought to take better care of the one that we inhabit right now. As for Blue Skies, there are three characters here. The daughter is the heroine. Her name is Kat. She's from Santa Barbara. She's 26. She recently moved to coastal Florida because her boyfriend's mother died and she left him her house on the beach, a beautiful beach house, which they could never have afforded on their own. The second character is Ottilie, their mother. She's in her 70s. She lives here in Santa Barbara. And like many of us, she wants to reduce her carbon footprint. And so she adopts insects in her diet as a protein source. And so when we meet her in the second chapter, she's giving an elegant dinner party serving insects like tacos with caterpillars in them, and of course chapulines and stuff like that. The third character, Cooper, also in Santa Barbara, is an entomologist doing field work in the Santa Ynez Valley, who is the kind of environmentalist who is always very critical of the rest of us.
You know, I got to say that those characters were so interesting to me, because it not only, you know, you're covering the two coasts, you've got the Santa Barbara and you've got Florida. And then it was interesting because to me, both coasts took up the mantle. And I saw that you were interviewed and had critical reviews in some of the Florida papers as well. And I think I listened to a YouTube interview of you where you were asked, how's Florida?
Well, okay, so it seemed to me incredibly ironic that we are going through our 1,200-year drought and begging for rain. And meanwhile, in Florida, we have the opposite situation due to global warming. The seas are rising. They're having the king tides regularly now. And so I wanted to contrast the two. This is, you mentioned earlier, A Friend of the Earth from the year 2000. This is a companion piece to A Friend of the Earth, but it focuses just on this one family. How are we all dealing with climate change? How is it affecting us? One way it's affecting me at this very moment is, after 30 years in this house, my house insurance has been canceled because all the insurers are bailing out of California.
Yep.
Even though, you know, we haven't ever made a claim, or, and we're in the lowest fire zone, et cetera. They don't care. So this is the kind of thing that affects us all. The rains we had this winter, for instance, a miracle. But of course, now we have to worry about more vegetation for fire, et cetera. So the focus here is just, how are we all getting on with our lives with this new normal, this new factor involved? And by the way, we should point out that it's funny. The book is funny. It's, you know, I'm always kind of whistling past the graveyard. And the beauty, by the way, of fiction and films in which something horrible is happening to somebody is it's happening to somebody else. So that's how we can get so deeply involved in it.
I would say it's interesting in the book because, you know, on the one coast, you've got menacing water. You've got Ian, Michael, Irma, Montecito's on the other side. And we've got temperature inside of 97 degrees in the book, and the cloudless blue skies hang over a temperature outside of 116 degrees. And so,
yes, dear, but this morning when I was walking the dog at 6:15, it was 59 degrees. And I'm sitting in this old house right now with a jacket on. We are lucky so far to have escaped it. But you might remember last summer, we had a freakish heat wave. And I had gone up to the Cold Spring Tavern, and it was over 100 there. And I thought, gee, you know, I'm a tourist. I can feel this 100 degrees. It was 70 back here. But the next day, it was over 100 here in Montecito, which I'd never seen before. So these variations are larger spikes in them, and we're seeing them more frequently.
I think it's interesting because it's the 100-year cycle that is now the week-long cycle.
Yeah.
You know, so and we'll say the book is funny. It really is. It's funny in a kind of like, a visceral way. And it there's a humor there that I love that whistling past the graveyard quote there, TC. Mm. It's really interesting. And when we get back from the break, Richard's giving us a sign we have to go break. I want you to reflect for me on adjustment versus prevention. And we are adjusting in a sort of a backhanded, weak way to climate change, as we see by this family's adjustment. And yet, is the adjustment sort of the blanket over the face so that we don't have to focus on real prevention? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if the book answers that or not, but I'd love to hear you think about it for me when we get back from the break. Hey, Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
All right, let's go to quick break. Just quick reintroduction. T.C. Boyle is with me. I'm just totally thrilled and honest. Blue Skies is his latest novel. And we are doing this because the Art Museum said, look, we're doing a lecture Thursday, July 20th, but unfortunately it's sold out. So we're going to do it anyway. We're talking to T.C. Boyle. I'm helped by Deborah Larkin. Okay, Rachel, let's go to quick break.
Check out the weather, what's it like outside? Check out the ground, check out the sky. What word would you use to describe what you see? What is the temperature, how many degrees? Is it sunny when you look outside?
Welcome back, it's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm speaking with T.C. Boyle about his latest book, Blue Skies. And Deborah Larkin is with us, who's an author, and she talked a little bit during the break when all great things are said about the fuzzies. And you got to read the book, but Deborah's going to ask a question about the fuzzies. Go ahead, Deborah.
No, I was just making a comment that I just really love the characters. They're just so real to me and amusing. Yeah, you're talking about that it's very humorous. I've read that you get the ideas from some of your books and your stories from articles in the newspaper. And I can see where in Blue Skies, obviously everything that's being said about the environment would be an inspiration. But what about your characters in this book?
Unfortunately, they just sort of develop on their own. When I was a student at Iowa in the workshop, the old writers would come to town and tell us that that's the way the characters happen. They would develop on their own. At that time, I was just writing these bizarre, surreal stories, and characters had little to do with it. I was more interested in design and language. But yeah, they were right.
They seem very real to me. They seem
well,
like
thank
very
you. They're
real,
not based on anybody exactly. They're just invented. But of course, there are parts of people I know in them. And the invention part is why I love to write fiction so much. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't have an outline. It just starts. And I follow it.
Did you ever get into trouble with a friend or a family member because they thought one character was them?
I have not. And the very best material that I have has to do with my wife and her family. But that is strictly forbidden if I want to remain married. No,
yeah,
I really haven't. Only twice in my career I have had a character in a novel that is a dead ringer for somebody I know. And in one case, it was a woman who was upset by it. And in the other case, it was the bad guy in my second novel, Budding Prospects, which is about a marijuana farm in Northern California. And he is the bad guy. And he loves being the bad guy. He has shirts with the book title on it, and he brags about it. He talks to the people who want to make movies about it. So you can never tell. But basically, I avoid writing about actual people. All the characters are an amalgam of people, and also just a pure invention. It just kind of happens.
And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the title of the book, because it has to do with that question I was asking you. I think the title does anyway. You know, do we adapt or do we prevent or how do we handle that? It has to do with the sky looking more white than blue, and can we live with that?
Yeah. Okay. So Blue Skies is coming from the Irving Berlin song that's been covered a million times, but I love Lyle Lovett's version of it. It's just brilliant, and it's at least in the first verse, it's rather a cheerful song. Blue skies that make you happy. Later in the book, there's a development which is quite possible to do scientifically today. That is to go up into the troposphere and spray chemicals that would help block the sun in the way that the sun was blocked during the Mount Pinatubo eruption, for instance, when you have a cloud of gas going around the world and it blocks the sun like an umbrella. That is conceivable, and that could happen. So in my telling, a very rich guy, we don't know who he is, he's a billionaire living in the Philippines, hires a bunch of commercial jets, retrofits them, goes up, and on his own, he solves the global warming crisis. It just happens toward the end of the book, and you kind of get a glimmer of what it might be. Just recently after the book, though, I've written a bunch of new stories, one of which is called Cold Summer, set in New England, and I have the same scenario brought out at farther length. A couple is living there, and it's June, and it snows in June, and they're wondering why. Well, it's because the weather has been permanently altered by humans, which is what we're living with now. But of course, this would be an even more catastrophic solution to things.
And what do you think about that? So one critical, I can't remember, was it Tampa Bay Times? A gripping yet eerie narrative that forecasts a disaster of our own making. It's humans interested in adapting rather than preventing doom. So that adapting versus preventing question.
Well, we are preventing. We're trying to prevent. When I was a kid growing up in New York, there were no limits to anything. The world was infinite. There were dark places in it. We threw everything away. Garbage was garbage. Life was life. We had big gas-burning automobiles. Nobody thought anything of it. So at least in our time, we've had the environmental movement. Thank God for Earth Day and Santa Barbara. We are aware. We have the Green Party in Germany doing great things. The Democratic Party here in America, at least, is interested in climate change and helping to ameliorate its effects, all to the good. But in the meantime, since I was a kid, the population has more than doubled of the Earth. We now have reached 8 billion. So one wonders how long we can sustain our lifestyle given the forces that are changing the food chain. Another thing with this, is the insects. We talked about the insects. One motivating factor for this for me was a report in the news around 2017 or so of this German entomological society, the Krefeld Society. They're amateur entomologists. They've been tracking numbers of flying bugs for many, many years. And those numbers crashed by 80%. No bugs. What does that mean? I mean, what about the bottom of the food chain? We're at the top, but what about the bottom? Is it all going to collapse? And incidentally, you mentioned Florida recently. So on the American book tour for this, I drove from Tampa to Miami, across the Miami highway, through the Everglades, 4.5 hours with my publicist. One bug splattered on the windshield in the entire drive across the Everglades. Imagine, you remember when you were a kid? Every time you drove in the country, you'd have to get out and wipe the glop off the windshield. What happened to that? What does that mean?
You got to be kidding. One bug in 4 hours Everglades?
Yes, my dear, but we did give it a proper burial.
This is the deferred cost of our American lifestyle on a certain level. Okay, Richard, we got to go to quick break. That's his signal. I want to reintroduce, I'm speaking with T.C. Boyle about Blue Skies, his latest novel. It's a fantastic, somebody described it as cli-fi, not sci-fi. Very interesting. And Deborah Larkin is helping me interview T.C. Don't turn that dial, back in a minute.
Now we know the names of the seasons, four and all. Winter, spring, summer, fall.
Ice cold, and believe me, will it get old? Winter comes rolling in, freezing everything straight. Icicles building a snowman, bundle up, it gets chilly. Got my gloves.
Welcome
on
back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with T.C. Boyle. Deborah Larkin, who is an author as well, is helping me. A question So TC, I've read 14 out of the 19 novels, and 14, let's say the 14 I've read, I counted them and I went last night. Eight of those 14, eight are set in California. And I'm wondering, I know this is your home. Is there a California that you, I mean, why is the question? Why set in California?
No, I'm very lucky in many respects. And one is this. I grew up in a working class family in suburban New York. We were very provincial. My parents were uneducated. I went to SUNY New York in Potsdam, and always the public schools. We had great public schools, but I was very provincial and I hadn't been west of the Hudson River really. But then I began to publish, and the Iowa Writers Workshop, the best, and in fact, the only program I knew about, accepted me. So I didn't really know where Iowa was, but it wasn't that hard to find. Put my girlfriend in the car and the dog and two cats and spent 5.5 years there. And then it was time to be a professor. And I was a finalist for three jobs. And it would have been so different. My life would have been, and fiction would have been so different had I wound up someplace else. But USC gave me the job, and I founded their writing program and taught writing classes there until about 5 or 6 years ago when I got tired of driving down there. And that's how I wound up in California. And so I've always been a kind of fish out of water. And so I could write a book like The Tortilla Curtain, wondering about the prejudice, racial prejudice and prejudice against immigrants amongst native Californians when I didn't know anything about that. I wrote the book to kind of assess that and find out about it. And so many of my books are set in California for that reason. California is my home now for over 40 years, but still it is a new territory for me, new turf.
And I have to say, Richard, I want to tell you something you probably don't know. So Richard does a lot of radio books. He reads books and gets paid to read books and this sort of thing. TC is no stranger to radio or the audio world. He's reading his work. He won the Audie Prize, Richard, for reading of Tortilla Curtain, the book we're just talking about now, and best audio performance by a writer. And his radio chops are also on display at New York's PRI show, Selected Shorts, on WNYC. So
I love to be an actor, and this sort of thing we'll be doing at the Santa Barbara Art Museum, which we do kind of regularly, and around the world. I just got back from a two-week German tour on stage there, and I love to perform out loud. I love to perform the stories as an actor. It's a thrill to me, and I do love to do audiobooks. I've done a few of the novels, but mainly I do the short story collections because, as Richard knows, it requires tremendous focus in the studio. I always go to sound design here in Santa Barbara. A shout out to Dom, who runs that wonderful studio. I think the last time I did the collection of stories, the first day I came in, we wrap it up in 3.5 days. And I made the big mistake of going out to lunch because, you know, the microphones are so sensitive. When you start to have peristalsis in your stomach, you can hear it. So I went out and had lunch. I came back and I kept fumbling over everything because I was sleepy. So the next day, I didn't have lunch. I just walked around the corner twice, got a bag of peanut M&Ms and a Diet Coke, and bam, we slammed it home.
And TC, I've always wanted to know this. When you went through your doctoral courses, did you, as a writer, did you have to write a dissertation?
Because I got, well, yes, you do, for your MFA, but also for the PhD. Iowa made the exception in the case of just a few writers, John Gardner, for instance, and Jane Smiley, myself, that you could do the traditional PhD in every way, but instead of a critical thesis, you could do a creative thesis, which is what I did, which turned out to be my first book.
Okay, I was wondering, because I was thinking, I wonder what T.C. Ball would have written as a critical.
Yeah. Well, my PhD is in 19th century British literature. But when I got to SC, they never wanted me to teach in my specialty area, nor did I particularly. I didn't really want to be a scholar. I wanted to be a creative writer. They needed me to teach creative writing.
I have a question. I've read that it's part of your writing process that you listen to music when you write.
Yes, I always listen to music at all times. Yeah. And that's, I'm a rock and roll guy. You know, I used to be the singer in a band. I love rock and roll. But that's only when I'm doing emails, for instance, or relaxing by the fire in the winter with a cat on my lap and a book in my hand. When I'm working, I am listening to classical or the jazz of my youth, or current jazz as well, without lyrics, because lyrics would be distracting. Right. But the music is there, and it gives me a foundation. It gives me joy. It gives me rhythm. Another reason why I love to read my work aloud is to hear the beat of it. It's like singing to good prose, and I hope that's what I'm producing, is like a song, and it has a certain beat and rhythm to it. And I think music in the background not only calms me and inspires me, but I think helps give me that rhythm.
Yeah, I found that very interesting, because I've never heard another writer say that they have music on when they're, and music without lyrics when they're writing. But I could see that maybe that would affect the flow of your sentences. And
well, I don't know. Well, you're right. I don't know you quite well enough, Deborah, to include you in this. But all other writers I know are sociopathic, drug addicted alcoholics. And angry about everything in the whole world. So that's why they don't listen to music.
Okay. Well, I've only written one book, so, you know, I haven't really gotten
all right, we'll let you off
writing easy. Lifestyle.
Just a dumb question. TC, when do you write? Do you write in the morning? Do you write?
Right, I mean, now, my dear, right now I'm taking this break to do your show. I write in the morning. I'm usually done by 2:30. And that's when you see me heading out alone with the dog up into our chaparral in the mountains there for a hike, or down to the beaches to take a walk, read a book, body surfing. I love to go kayaking. I was kayaking yesterday in the harbor and swimming off the point. The water was Arctic yesterday, and I think it was because I got there at high tide and the tide was coming in. But wow, it was cold.
You don't wear a wetsuit?
No, it restricts your arms if you're swimming.
Oh my God!
Well, you can get
so I can only swim for 5 or 6 months a year. Around Halloween, I normally have to give up because it becomes too cold. But you know, I do rely on my huge reserves of body fat to keep me going.
You're right.
That reminds me of Ross McDonald, who also lived in Santa Barbara, and I know he used to go out and swim in the ocean.
Yeah, I've read his biography, and he went to the Coral Casino, and he was a member of that, and he swam there and in the ocean, and that sounded like he had a pretty good life here.
Yeah,
it's really interesting to me that contrast between, like, Hemingway, I will sit in this chair till I put something down, and then the other types of inspired writers that say, I wait for the muse to come on me.
Everybody's different. And so all the books about how to write are completely irrelevant. They might be interesting in that if you love a particular writer, you want to know more about him or her, so you read the book. But it doesn't have anything to do with how you yourself will produce your own work. That the way you work is completely unique for everybody, just as what you're going to produce is completely unique.
And so when we get back in the break, Richard's giving us time. We got to go to a quick break. You know, we were going through the list of the books that you've written. Do you intend to keep that pace? That's just an amazing pace for a writer. And the short stories is just, it blows my mind.
I'm fighting against the grave. I don't know if you realize, but everybody's got to die. And so you don't usually produce as much work after death as before, although Jimi Hendrix is an exception. He has an album out every year, despite the fact he's been dead for 40 years or however long it's been. So, yeah, you know, I do have an impetus here, death. And I have such joy in making stories. I don't know what the next one will be. And when I make one, like the one, by the way, that is in Esquire as of 2 days ago, I'm thrilled. And once that thrill is gone, which it's gone very quickly, then I have to do it again and again and again. I've compared it to a kind of addiction. You may know my essay, This Monkey, My Back, in which I compare this kind of artistic obsession with a kind of drug addiction.
This Monkey, My Back. And what's the title of the story in Esquire right now?
Sanctuary. And so while I was writing Blue Skies, we had the whole Trump phenomenon, and I couldn't really comment on it because I was writing the novel. So this story, Sanctuary, you'll see a woman with a MAGA hat in it, and it has to do with the border wall in Texas and the butterfly sanctuary there, and the two sides of this issue.
Sanctuary. Fantastic. I want to hear more about that when we get back from the break. I remember listening to somebody, I think it was in the Northeast, interview you and ask you about politics. And you said, no, I'm not going to talk about politics. But I think it's super interesting, this idea of the sanctuary, the butterflies versus the sanctuary of the immigrants. Fantastic.
Hey, I do Richard. Talk about politics a lot. I don't write about politics because I don't want to push anything on anybody. But of course, I talk about it. Trump came into power, I did a whole series of essays for one of the German newspapers, a kind of diary of what it's like, especially in the countdown to the last election. Yeah, I'm very politically connected, but I don't feel that politics should play a part in art.
Fantastic. We're introducing T.C. Boyle and being helped in this interview by Deborah Larkin. T.C.'s new book, Blue Skies, fantastic, funny, ironic, devastatingly depressing at the same time, but super, super, I mean, just engrossing, and engrossing in a lot of different ways. Published by Norton, available everywhere, and came out this March. Richard, let's go to quick break.
What's the weather? What's the weather? What's the weather like today? All together, what's the weather like today? Hey, let's look out the window and see what the weather's like today. What's the weather? What's the weather? What's the weather like today? All together, what's the weather like today? Ooh, what's that sound? Look at the trees. Look, it's windy. Look, it's windy. Look, it's windy.
Welcome back. Everyone. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with T.C. Boyle, my hero. Many, many novels, many, many short stories, a marvelous career, helped by Deborah Larkin. Deborah, take it over for me.
T.C., you mentioned the essay, This Monkey, My Back. And in it, you talk about, the themes of many of your stories, your books, the search for the father, racism, class and community, all of those things, but that you, and they keep repeating, but you say that you can see this, but only in retrospect. So when you're writing, you're not necessarily seeing that you have a theme or that, well, tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you don't begin a writing career by saying these are my themes and this is what I'm going to pursue. It just happens to you. And over the years, from my first book on, which is called Descent of Man after Charles Darwin, it's sort of I'm focusing on our being as animals on this mysterious planet and what that means, especially biologically and ecologically. And I can look back and, of course, I could write an essay on how all these books are allied and so on and so on. But I'm not necessarily aware of it when I begin something. I'm just interested in things, particularly, especially in the short stories, so many changes are going on in our lives, radical changes, especially from technology. So we're talking about my doing audiobooks. The last one that I did solely on my own is the Relive Box from a couple of years ago of short stories. And in this book, the Relive Box is about games, video games. And also in this is Are We Not Men? Both of which the New Yorker published. And it's about the new technology of CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology and what that means for us in the future. So I love to try to address these issues to see what I can make of them, because I don't know. I don't know how I feel about things unless I'm writing a fiction about them. It all happens in that mysterious place where you're in your unconscious mind.
Richard's giving us a sign we got to go to quick break so we can get to the so Richard, go ahead and let's go to quick break, and when we get back from the break, I'd love to hear more. You know what, I just introduced my question. My overarching question was the Blue Skies, this novel in particular, to me it spoke to me personally, TC, about consumption. You know, we consume, and in many ways it was to me the theme in my and it was very interesting to me that you said, well, I know you're an appraiser, Elizabeth, and people have these things and they regret that their kids don't want them, so grind them all up and eat them. And I thought, well, that I want to ask TC about this idea of consumption just very quickly when we get back from break. Richard, let's go to quick break.
It usually starts with a cloud formation. Gas turns to liquid during condensation. Well, that's the scientific explanation. But rain is what you see fall down. And there's other types too coming down in your town, like sleet, hail, or even snow. Precipitation, you should know. Anything and everything that comes from the sky, get your umbrella or stay inside.
Check out the weather, what's it like outside? Check out the ground, check out the sky. What word would you use to describe what you see? What is the temperature, how many degrees?
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart talking with the great writer T.C. Boyle. And T.C., just before we get, only have a few minutes, but can you talk to me? Why did I think that for Elizabeth, this was a book, Blue Skies, about consumption?
Well, of course, one of the problems we're having with global warming is the idea of capitalist society, which requires infinite consumers and infinite product in order to keep the economy going on a finite planet. So a lot of what I've written about has to do with that. I, of course, am as guilty as anybody, being a child of Western civilization, using resources. I try to live a simpler life, but it's pretty much impossible, especially because I'm married to a woman who loves to acquire things, huge mounds of things all the time. Otherwise, she can't be satisfied. And again, this refer to my story that the New Yorker published years ago called Filthy with Things, in which a couple is so packed, their house is so packed, they can barely even get in the door anymore, and they have to hire a professional organizer by the name of Susan Sertain, who comes and packs up everything and sells it and keeps the profit.
I know that world. So yeah, my dissertation was regarding that level of consumerism and what connoisseurship versus the negative of the pathological version of connoisseurship, which is the hoarding. And boy, we do that. I see that up close and personal. I just want to give one more shout out. The book is Blue Skies, T.C. Boyle, published Norton, and published out this March. Go grab it. It's a wonderful read. It's a fantastic story. It's a fun story. And this is a gripping narrative for sure. And you're going to have a lot of thoughts about your life when you get through with it and your family's life too. Thank you, Deborah. Mr. Boyle, thank you so very much.
My pleasure, Elizabeth. Thank you.